You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Toronto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself. Ghetto people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing ghetto to yourself. You gotta learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Today is Wednesday, hump day. Got to get over the hump. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you'll get it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is, and that's why we love you and appreciate you. But if you don't have to, stay safe. Stay in home. You know, if you do go out, wear your mask. You know, keep your distance, because coronavirus is about to spike. In fact, I think 3/4 of the states here in this country and places around the world, they're spiking. This is no joke. You know, I think everybody I've talked to, they know somebody who died of this. H1N1, I didn't know nobody. Swine flu, I don't know nobody. But I know about 10 people who have died from this. So, anyway, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look at the top of the page, and you'll see podcasts. Click on that, and then you'll see the drop-down says African Perspectives, and then you click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled that you can listen to at your pleasure or whatever. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., all times are going to give our Eastern times. Also on Monday evening, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad Ahmed. Followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. And then after that program, every first and third Mondays, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 10, After 7 with host Shani B. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is, brothers and sisters. That's right. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard every Friday at 8 p.m. Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, Sankofa, the Elders Council, with host Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday, once again, at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. It's the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. It's WeBuyBlack.com. So go online. They have this, the laundry detergent. All kinds of stuff, brothers and sisters. Check them out. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans with Bomani Tahemba, my good brother Bomani Tahemba. Give him a call so you can set yourself up for a trip of a lifetime. He's going to Tanzania November 20th through the 30th this year, $3,700. He's going to Ghana December 24th through January 5th, 2021, also $3,700. Then in April, April 2nd through the 12th, he's going to Senegal and Gambia, $3,500. And then May 24th to June 4th, Ghana, going to Ghana, $3,700. And then in November, November 19th through the 29th, 2021, he's going to South Africa, $3,700. Please, brothers and sisters, give brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. I know there's still some issues and some problems with because of COVID-19. I'm not sure if this will go on, but it'll be rescheduled. But please check the brother out. That's Brother Bomani Tahemba, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Ronoka Rashidi has a trip upcoming to Uganda and Rwanda. And that is January 21st to February 4th, 2021 for $4,200. Beautiful pictures he has on his website. Go to drrinoco.com. Beautiful pictures. And like I said, that is upcoming. He also has a trip to Kemet, August 1st to August 14th, 2021, going to Kemet. Habesha means helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. The brothers and sisters are doing the work with Habesha Incorporated.org. I mean, the various programs that they have. You got to give it up for them, especially the Kashi Project that is going on in Ghana. Right now, the buildings are up and so forth. They're doing the work here locally with educational programs, the Kashi Project, sustainable agricultural entrepreneur. They're doing the work. They deserve to be supported. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org to check it out. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, my good friend, Mama Nia. Saw her last week. She's doing well. But if you're in the Atlanta area at the Greenbrier Mall, check out the Medu Bookstore. It's right across from in that area of Chick-fil-A, which is the original Chick-fil-A in the Atlanta area. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore. They have a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, and all kinds of figurines and so forth. And give her a call. Because if she doesn't have the book that you want, believe me, she'll get it. Also, to my good brother, Gazimde Ajamu, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Give my good brother a call. He has a coffee bar now. It's a great place to just sit down and chill out. And he's going to be doing some radio broadcasting from his site at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Remember, brothers and sisters, there is light in the black dot. 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right on Ralph David Abernathy, across the street from Soul Veg, right up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna and the West End Mall. Check out Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us, their Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night at 9 p.m. 1 hour broadcast at 9 p.m. tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern. You can go online to blogtalkradio.com/Us Lifting Us or ULU. blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The program is called Dare to Win. Or you can call 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Thursday night broadcast. That's right, Us Lifting Us. Sanjay Dash Aidi, my good friend, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia. And she's doing outstanding work. She is in Haiti. I talked to her recently. She's there in Haiti. And it's at Sanjay Dash Haiti. SONJAYITI.org. Sanjay Dash Haiti. Give my good sister a call. Sanjay Dash Haiti. Akaban Institute, my brother Baba Baruti and his lovely wife Mama Yah, whose birthday it was Monday. It was her birthday Monday. I was glad to share that with our community. And they need support, although because of the COVID, they probably have picked up a lot of students from around the state and out of state and maybe even around the country, around the world, because of they can go online to a Zoom, and that's what they're doing. They're doing virtual classes. So I hope that that has happened, but they still need to be supported. And so send your check or money order out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Or Cash App or PayPal. Go to Cash App, the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your monetary donations to help out Akaban Institute. I'll announce their upcoming monthly men's and women's meeting coming up real soon. Get through this. I can get to my guest, Brother Muhammad Abdullah. We have a lot to talk about, talking about voting and the political process and a whole bunch of other stuff. I look forward to it. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. September 29th. Nations must reap what they sow. Drusilla Dungy Houston. Let me state this about Sister Drusilla Dungy Houston. Drusilla Dungy Houston wrote a book in 1926, the same year that Carter G. Woodson established what was then called Negro History Week, which evolved into Black History Month, which I call African and African American or American African History Month, February. She wrote a book in 1926 called The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. She has a quote that has stuck with me. This is may not be verbatim, but you'll get the gist. She says, as it relates to history, she says, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our culture can dare not refute." And this is the deep part of the quote. She says, "How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past?" And I maintain that's the problem that we have still today, that we are utterly ignorant of our past, particularly, some of the so-called leaders, especially those religious leaders. You know, they might quote scripture. You know, just like when the brother said that, you know, the Bible's a history book. No, it's not. It's not a history book. There may be some stuff in it. The Bible, well, I'm not going to go there. Let me finish this quote. The quote from Drusilla Dungy Houston's "Nations Must Reap What They Sow." And this is Baba Baruti's response, the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. "We are dealing with a people who cannot live with constraints moral or otherwise. A people who cannot be wrong, a people who cannot be healed because they do not see themselves as truly sick, or they do not see their sickness as curable. Insane people who know they are insane and see their insanity as fundamental to their survival do not want to become sane. And the recognition that one is mentally ill, especially repeatedly told by different socially and culturally unrelated people, must come from an internal awakening. For these people who do not know who they are, we cannot make them see themselves for what they are because they do not want to see themselves. Moreover, it wastes precious time we need to spend on healing ourselves. It's just like cognitive dissonance. It's cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. There ain't a damn thing that we can do or say to prove otherwise. They believe they are superior. They believe that they're ordained. They have manifest destiny. They believe in white or Caucasian hegemony. They believe that they suffer from Caucasian fragility, white fragility. What that means is that they're so fragile, they don't want to hear. They don't want to hear the evil they have done. They don't want to hear. And they shown in hell don't want to hear it from us. Moreover, it wastes precious time. We need to spend time healing ourselves. They know that a public confession of who they really are will undermine all rationalizations for their privilege. Affirm, I issue no warnings to those who are irreparably insane. Affirm, I issue no warnings to those who are irreparably insane. Today, September 30th. Armed with knowledge of our past, we can with confidence charter a course for our future. Culture is an indispensable weapon in the freedom struggle. We must take hold of it and forge the future with the past. Brother El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Brother Malcolm X. I've been told by Africans, despite desperate to be identified as nothing other than Americans, that they follow no tradition. That in itself is an insane statement, because everything people do is based on tradition. Beyond raw instinct, tradition is the collection of logical, beneficial, acceptable habits internalized by a dynamic, thriving community intent on survival and extending itself to the future. Culture provides the parameters of tradition. The asili, the origin of the culture, provides the parameters of culture. So even those traditions which may seem new or odd in a particular society somehow fall within the bounds of that people's cultural and its asili, its origin. Or they will be suppressed or removed and lost from functional memory. When you operate within someone else's tradition, as if it was your own, you literally have no social decision-making power and are culturally barren. Affirm, I have a tradition and it empowers me. Affirm, I have tradition and it empowers me. Make a comment on that quote, too, before I get to my guest. What that was saying is about power. When you accept somebody else, see, power is not voting. I know we're going to talk about voting. Power ain't voting. Power ain't even information or education, because if information and education receive a flawed and inaccurate, and it is, no power. Power is not money. Power ain't none of that. What power is the ability to define reality. Europeans, when they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, they had this so-called awakening when they kicked the Moors out of Spain and the Sephardic Jews out of Spain. And they said, we made war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those of us who are outside of us. And they began to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of. They define reality. They said, this is the reality. This is the religion. This is the mode of contact. These are the things we're going to do. And you would have to accept that reality as if it's your own under the threat of death. That's what power is, the ability to define reality and then have someone else accept your definition as if it's our own. The problem for us is that we need to ask ourselves, who are we in Europeans and Caucasians and white folks reality? Who are we? First, we were the soulless people with no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity, justifying our enslavement because we had no culture. And then many of us believe that we are thankful for Caucasians for doing this. Because we have accepted their reality as if it's our own. We need to ask ourselves, who are we in the Caucasians' reality today? We're thugs and drug addicts, no fit fathers and no fit mothers. We're the scourge in the society. We're those who are unintelligent. Because it is their reality. We need to shape reality in our image and in our inches. That's why I'm saying, brothers and sisters, that's why this program is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. To put something on your mind. Let me get to my guest. Good morning, Brother Muhammad. Assalamualaikum.
Good morning, Oshie.
How
good
are you?
Good morning, Oshie. I'm all things considered. I'm well. Thank you for having me on again. And I'm going to say two things that I've never said publicly, but I feel it's the right time to say this. Hotep Ashe.
Ashe.
I'm going to ask you, Ted Reed okay? My enunciation.
Right on.
Did I say it correctly?
You got
all
it.
Right, thank you,
that's
brother.
Right. Hotep. Peace. The ancient Kemetic language. The ancient Kemetic language. Hotep. Peace. And of course, Ashe means so be it in the African, West African language. Ashe. And then you can say Asante Sana, which means thank you. Or Madasi. Madasi P. Thank you very much.
Shukran.
Yeah.
Shukran. Jazakallah khairan, Oshi. Thank you. And may God grant you the good.
Right on. Look, man, there's so many things we could talk about, but we said we're going to talk about voting. We're going to get off into that. We got a good amount of time, a good hour and a half. We do have a break at 12 or 11 o'clock your time. You know, we're going to take that break so you can, you know, as old folks can do what we need to do if we have to do it.
Absolutely. You know. They call that a commercial break.
That's right. But,
we're not spending no money. We're just going to get back what we took.
That's right. Man, so did you watch that debate last night? I didn't watch it.
I'm going to get into my, you know, I'll usually have a movie reference because as you and I both know, and I'll share this with the listeners, there's no limit to what you can do with the photo.
That's right, brother.
And that's Oshie and my favorite quote from the movie Ragtime.
That's right.
Where this man basically says that if you can get control of the airwaves and the media and the medium, you can influence people in a way that they won't know they're being influenced. That was profound to me, and I believe you as well, the first time that I heard it. So, again, about last night, which is a movie I've never really watched.
Me either, about last night. Like, that's an old movie. That's right.
But I watched it, and of course, you know, I use a metaphor in something that I posted. Never wrestle with a greased pig. And so from the outset, Joe Biden's and the moderators' hands were full. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, most people's introduction to the 45, the guy that's in the White House right now, most of the people who followed Barack Hussein Obama, who, you know, did the best of his ability to ride that horse that is the White House being president. But I think most African Americans can say proudly that a man who looks like us, who has the same origin we have, directly, you know, his father was from Kenya, but he was there for 8 years with no scandal. He didn't try to enrich himself or his friends while he was there. And then we got this person that's there now, and he is almost like the pandemic. Mm. We've never seen anybody like this before.
Right.
We've had some terrible presidents of the United States.
Right.
We've had presidents of the United States that are glorified on money and in statues and in the words in the halls of Congress, Abraham Lincoln. These people owned slaves. We were property to them. But no, I don't believe anyone has ever been in that seat, sat behind that resolute desk like the person is there now. So, yeah, I watched it. It was hard to watch sometimes because similar, akin to why you asked me recently, Oshie, you know, well, let's do something. And I came to voting because, one, it's something that I'm passionate about. And two, I did something that was embarrassing for me, but I've been embarrassed before, and I know how to try to follow up with embarrassing.
Right, haven't we all?
But I was having a discussion with a young African-American brother here in Madison, Madison, Wisconsin, African-American living in what a Caucasian woman described to me as an ocean of white people here in Madison. So this young brother, who I've befriended, he looks up to me. We travel a little bit together. And we had a discussion. I lost my temper in the discussion because he said things that, to me, and somewhat what he said basically was, I don't vote. I don't think there's any benefit in voting. This is, this is rigged. They know who's going to get in. And he kind of went on and on. So for me, I had to track him down and apologize to him. And of course, he told me it wasn't necessary, but I told him, no, I'm apologizing to you because I believe you as a man, like I am, have a right to think whatever you want.
Okay.
I have no right to impose my opinion, my feelings on your feelings and what you believe in, how you see the world. And I would be, if I was in this position, and I've been in this position, I don't like it. The other thing is, in my training, overall training as a customer service person, as a da'i and person who's trained to invite people to Islam, and as a former seller of Muhammad Speaks newspaper when I was in the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad of Chicago, never take anything personal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a principle that I try to internalize and practice. That if you step up to the plate to invite or to represent something, you cannot afford to take anything personal. Even as parents raising our children, it's hard to not take some of the things your children do personal. And at some point, you have to step back and say, okay, you're not a minor anymore. You're an adult, or as Secretary of Defense says, you're a grown ass man. And a woman, and it's not my right to step on your toes about what you believe. So that was the reason why I did this, because I wanted to have the discussion.
Right.
But I want to have it in a way that's balanced and where people can say what they think. And for people who don't believe in voting, they have that right.
Right.
But I think we all deserve to listen to each other. And that's sort of what brought me here today. In terms of this discussion, and I'll be quiet for a minute. If you got another question, but yeah, I did see the debate, and I was disappointed. But not really disappointed, because you know what to expect when you
right.
deal with this dude.
Right.
Like you, I stepped in the ring with Mike Tyson, and he's in his heyday. You know your ass gonna get knocked out or run.
Yeah. You know what to expect. And I mean, even though he was coached supposedly by a few people, because they know that he's behind, and so he can't do what he did yesterday. He, you know, he should have been just saying about this is what we've done. And even to the, even to some degree, I ain't saying apologize because that is not in him to do so, but say that, you know, this is what has happened with the virus, and this is what we did, and this is what we're going to do. And if that's what they wanted his ass to do, but he can't do that. You know, he's incapable of doing that. You know, he had he's a bully. He's a narcissistic bully. And so he had to.
He's a narcissistic, racist, white supremacist bully.
Yeah.
And that came out to anybody, you know, that Stevie Wonder or Helen Keller would not have missed last night.
They could see that, huh?
Showing you who he is.
Yeah, Jose Feliciano and Ray Charles could see that, right?
Absolutely, you know, and so again, you know, no pun intended, but yeah, so he's the guy that's gonna try to light your fire. You know, I mean, that's what he knows how to do.
Yeah.
Try to throw you off, and of course, this is nothing new. Listen, I loved Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali was a master at causing a person to doubt themselves, to cause themselves to look foolish. Sometimes he went a little bit too far.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
I never really liked him, you know, using a little doll.
Right. The gorilla with Joe Frazier. Yeah.
Like, no, you come on, brother. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you buying into something there that. You know,
I mean, he apologized. He apologized to Joe. He apologized to Marvis Frazier, Joe's son, you know, and so forth. And you know, that was his thing back then, even before that. Of course, he was doing this before the his involvement with the Nation of Islam, because he saw how professional wrestlers would advertise and promote those matches. And so Gorgeous George, you know, back when we were coming up.
George in the White House. You know, the hair.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, you know, I mean, this guy is an entertainer, and America has been guilty of that before. I won't even compare him to Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan was an actor.
Right.
But he at least has been, you know, politically involved. He was head of the Screen Actors Guild.
Right. He could follow his lines.
California. Yeah, you know, but he was a politician. This guy is a mix of entertainer, celebrity, and John Gotti.
Yeah,
you know,
gangster.
He you know, he's from New York, and he thinks, you know, he tries to act like he's a mob boss.
Yeah,
and in some respects, he is. If you look at how everybody from the Attorney General on down, sort of, you know, a sycophant with regard to this guy. Yeah, that's exactly what he is. And he has some willing participants who have no morals, because they could, you know, whenever the dude blows, he's like the Pied Piper to them. They have no resistance, no governor to his bombacity.
Yeah, so he can throw those dog whistles out. He can put those dog whistles out. In fact, that was a good line from Harris, you know. And she said he threw those dog whistles out with a bullhorn.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, clearly, and Ochi, this, you know, one of the things I've heard young brothers say, who also have said, you know, one of my sons, said that they believe that this guy, they knew he was going to win last time. They believe he's going to win this time. But he looks different. He looks different now as a city president running with a track record behind him than he did when he first came into office. No matter what he said, I don't believe he believed he was going to win. Most people didn't believe he was going to win. But at some point, you know, whoever was organizing this thing. And another thing, when it comes down, and let me say this about voting to me, you know, one community that has our African-American people's a significant number of them attention at least once a week are pastors of churches. And supposedly, according to the Constitution or whatever, pastors cannot tell someone
right.
who to vote for.
Right.
But they can organize around political activity.
Right.
They
can get out to vote. They can do get out to vote. And of course they have to be equal in that sense of inviting a politician to the church to talk to their congregation. If they invite this particular candidate, they must invite the candidate's opponent. You know.
You know, let me ask you a question. If you know this now, what you just said, I know in terms of the public airwaves, that used to be the case.
Right.
But the Republicans passed something, and I can't remember when it was, somewhere shortly before George W. Bush or after he got in office. It may be part of this lawsuit that went up to the Supreme Court, which said you don't have to disclose where you get what they call dark money. There's something they come up with these political action committees. But the point I'm raising, if you notice, there used to be a time where if you put one person's ad on, you had to put the other.
Right, equal treatment.
That doesn't exist anymore.
Is that right?
They killed.
Equal.
Them.
I thought they still had equal treatment. Okay.
And I don't know if it extends, because clearly a pastor would not. A pastor could organize, or an imam or a rabbi could organize his congregation. He could do it off-site. He just delegate it to somebody else.
Listen.
Just make sure that while you have these people sitting in pews in front of you, to let them know that, and this is one point I wanted to make, I used this when I posted this, black votes matter. To vote or not to vote. It ain't just about who wins or loses. Meaning, when you go into a polling booth to vote, if you're eligible to vote, you have to be a U.S. citizen, you have to live in the district a certain number of days before you can and be registered to vote. But I consider voting, and I look at it like this, voting to me is political courage. And if you have the freedom and the right to vote, who, what, and why you vote is crucial and also personal. I cannot have my wife, my mother, or one of my children at my side when I'm in that voting booth unless I can document an impairment of some kind, visual, cognitive,
right.
hearing, physical.
Exactly.
So voting is more sacred and private than going to the bathroom for two Mormons, or they prefer to be called LDS, not they say, two LDS members on a mission.
Yeah.
When you see those two guys, most of the time they're Caucasian, but they're all kind of more. The LDS communities are pretty
diverse. Yeah, especially with Samoans.
Well, they go all over the world.
They go all over the world.
Wherever they go, they speak the language of the people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the guidance from the Quran.
Yeah.
They said, when Allah sent a prophet or messenger to a people, he didn't send them to somebody whose language he didn't speak or she didn't speak, or vice versa. And so, but my point being, when you see those two Mormons on a mission like that for 2 years, Mitt Romney, all of them have done this, the only time they are not together is when they go in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to vote, you in that booth by yourself. That's yours. And it's going to be recorded. I posted yesterday on Facebook that I wanted, in preparation for this, to call the election commission to find out, when is my mother, like your mother or your grandparents, most of us African Americans came up from the South, from the segregated South, North, and where we left, it was more likely you did not have the right or couldn't exercise
right.
the right to vote.
Right.
So,
because my folks came from here. My folks came from here in Georgia. You know, they came
right.
from here in Georgia.
Right.
They're going straight up because the conduit the is U.S. Highway 41. U.S. Highway 41 starts in Tampa, in that area, and goes straight north all the way into Canada, past Green Bay. That was
same 41 that I can take from Wisconsin to Milwaukee to Chicago.
That's right. And you can take it from Milwaukee. And once you take it from Milwaukee, you will take it from there to Gary. You take it from there to Indianapolis. You take it from there to Louisville. You take it from there to Nashville. You take it from there to Chattanooga. You take it from there to Atlanta. And then from Atlanta.
And also can go to Detroit and the East Coast.
Yes.
Part of that you have to get off with that, maybe that's 41 and go to something else. But clearly, it's part of the above ground railroad.
Exactly. Exactly. The above ground.
The migration of us out of the south to the north, where, you know, people died, and we know this history.
Yeah.
And of course, that is the undercurrent of behind most of us voting.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that voting, your voting and your right to vote and exercising it, as I say, is currency. And how you, like money, how you spend it is up to you. If you look at, I don't know about you, Oshie, but I did not grow up in my household, no disrespect to my mom, with financial literacy.
Right,
you know,
same
money
here.
Was something you did and got to live and to spend and have a good time. So if you look at political currency in the same way, how you spend your vote is up to you. Who you vote for is up to you. It's kind of like, it reminds me of the song, Dr. Feelgood, love and voting is serious business.
Mm-hmm.
Be it my mother, my brother, my sister, I don't need nobody around. I practice social distance when voting and using the bathroom before COVID-19. I loved my wife when I was married, but when I go in the bathroom and sit on the throne, come on, baby, I'll see you in a little while.
Exactly.
I don't even talk when I'm in the bathroom.
Exactly.
So voting is that sacred to me.
Okay,
but
that personal.
You do not have to stop there. It's up to you and it's up to us to organize. Now, again, I'm going to use the church reference again. If you go to church this Sunday and you can go back every Sunday 20 years, you don't ever have to become a member. Most people put money in the basket. If something's going on, they contribute to it financially. But if you're not a member of that church, if your name is not on a roll, you have no power.
Right.
The preacher can say, I think you all should buy me 9 Cadillacs. I think y'all should build a house next door to this church so when I get ready to come over here to raise your spirit, I don't want to have to do nothing but walk out of my house, out of one door and into another. That some religious communities were built on that, like the Jewish community, which can't walk on the Sabbath. They have always had strong communities because they got to be within walking distance to the temple or the synagogue
on Saturdays.
The Sabbath from 6 o'clock Friday night to 6 o'clock Saturday evening, which is the original Sabbath that even Christians before the Romans flipped it to Sunday. We don't have time to go down that dark corridor. I'd like to visit it sometimes, but
we'll do that one day because I always want to inform my listeners, the brothers and sisters that listen to this program, the best information about how stuff started, you know, and why
absolutely.
It is, and with all these traditions and so forth. So we'll do that one day. Go ahead, Brother Muhammad.
So again, we know right now, African Americans, historically, how we've operated to now, we have a leadership vacuum. If you ask, who is the leader of the Jewish people in America? Who is the leader of the Christian black community in America? You have organizations and you have individuals stand up, the National Baptist Convention, the Jewish social services or whatever the case. But when it comes to African Americans, we tend to be sort of free-fall. Or at least the longer we've been in this country, we've gone from having leaders that sort of directed our movement in terms of political and economic and educational and all these kind of rights. We don't really have that a lot anymore. A lot of the young people coming up now, unlike you and I, some of them are not necessarily tuned in to what's going on. They're challenged by, you know, cell phones, social media, whatever is the hot thing of at the moment, keeping up with Kim and Kanye or whoever, they have a lot more distractions. So many of us are looking like, who can get the attention of these young people? Who can get their attention so that they understand that, listen, you can think politics is not important, but when you look in our history, Oshie, and I'm going to point to one thing quick. Let's talk politically about the Electoral College and the Three-Fifths Compromise. I hope most people know what we're talking about when we say the Three-Fifths Compromise, because how about you? What is your understanding about the Three-Fifths Compromise?
Oh, that was for the Electoral College, because the Caucasians in the South were so few, and the people in the North would dominate the election. So they had to have a way that they could participate in the elections by having each African that you held captive was considered 3/5 of a person. And so when you add them all together, then the Caucasian who had them in captivity, and I use these words intentionally, had them in captivity so he could have those amounts of votes. Okay? And therefore, I mean, because if he had hundreds of them, and some did, then realistically, he's going to have a lot of votes and a lot of sway within the election locally, statewide, and of course, nationally. And when they brought them together, because when you consider the, I would say hundreds of, no, millions who were in captivity in the South, which gave the South some clout in those elections prior.
I've heard a figure like something like 4 million. Don't quote me on that, but I know it was.
Yeah.
It was several million. But, Oshie, I'm looking at it right now, and here's what it says. It says the compromise solution was to count 3 out of every 5 slaves as people for this purpose when it came to voting or being counted to determine what your representation is in the Congress. Now, this is a long time ago. This is in 1787. But it is as alive today as it was.
Yeah.
That's, what is it, yeah. 300 years ago? Because how did this dude that's sitting in the White House now, how did he get there?
That's how he got there.
He won the popular vote.
No, he got dusted. He got dusted.
Him and his followers are the only ones who won't acknowledge or admit that they lost the popular vote by 3 million. But based on the Electoral College, which I have a book downstairs in my library about getting rid of the Electoral College. It's about 6 inches thick. So there's clearly...
Wow.
Climate change and infrastructure, we drive cars, we're not at the table.
Yeah.
We're not in the fight. Here in Madison, where I live, very rich white community, Madison is, they have what's something called the Arboretum. It's like a preserve where people go and walk via nature. We're not in there. I mean, I'm not saying no African-Americans go in there. And so what I'm saying is, whoever steps up as a leader of African-Americans have to be in the game. Oshie, you and I love basketball.
And that's right. We're going to and we're gonna talk about that before we get off the air, too.
But as much as we love basketball, Mark Cuban or LeBron or Doc Rivers, man, I broke my heart.
Me too. He got fired from the Clippers.
I mean,
me
come
too.
Come on, man. Kawhi ain't been there for a year.
Yeah.
You fired a man. Come on. But because this is different, everything that happens going to have asterisks on. But point being, Oshie, LeBron and them—they're not getting ready to put us in the game. They don't even let us sit on the bench.
Yeah.
My grandson's father worked for security for the Washington Wizards. When they played in Milwaukee, if I try to go and walk up to the bench, he goes jump up. No, you got to stay over there.
That's right.
So what I'm using that metaphor to say is, but when it comes to politics, you only can keep yourself out of the game. Nobody can stop you from organizing. So again, Terrence Ray, voting is only going to be valuable currency is after either before or after you cast your ballot or whoever, you organize. If you weren't organized before, then you might not be organized when you vote. But afterwards, you there's nothing stopping you from organizing around whatever you think is important. And really, we should be at the table. The other day on the news, a little boy in Texas died from going to a swimming pool or possibly drinking water
right.
from the sink, which you right. and I don't do.
Yeah.
And many people don't do now. But so we drink water.
Yeah.
How can we not be interested in climate change? We breathe air. But who is talking to us about this? So it almost makes it like, well, okay, all we want from you is your vote. And after that, y'all can go sit down somewhere.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be like that.
Yeah.
That might be the way it is, but it doesn't have to be. And it doesn't lessen the possibility or the potentiality of it just because we're not in the game.
Right.
It really comes down to us and what we're going to organize around and agree on. And like you said, I posted that last week, or very recently, Oshi, we have enough enemies and enough things, coming at us that we really cannot afford to be fighting against each other.
That's for sure. That's
and
for
so
real.
How are we going to get past that in relation to voting and politics? That's something that should be up for discussion.
All right, my brother. We're going to take a break. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to take a break. We're talking with Brother Muhammad Abdullah, and we're talking about voting and the importance of voting and a lot of other issues. You can join us in this conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Herbie Hancock, the
traitor. I'm not going to read the other programming here, but I do have an announcement. A sister made a transition, a very prominent sister in the African-centered community in here in the States, and that was Dr. Patricia Newton out of Baltimore, a psychologist. I've heard her speak a number of times. She made her transition a few days ago, and last I saw her was in D.C. for the Chemetamorphosis Conference with Brother Anthony Browder and my good brother Renoka Rashidi. And so Patricia Newton made her transition. Also, too, we have the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And, you know, I mentioned it many times. I'm going to have, once again, Brother Mwali Mu. I'm starting on the program soon, along with my sister, my good friend, Nana Nabantu. And we're going to talk about the upcoming conference, which is October 14th through the 18th, here in North America. Actually, it's supposed to be here. It was supposed to be initially here in Atlanta, you know, but it's going to be virtual. So we'll come out of here, Atlanta, but it's going to be virtual around the states. And, of course, it is a North American. So anybody who is understanding of the importance of Pan-Africanism, because that's what this program is about here. This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Our motto here is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. But they have a commercial that I liked. I found it again, and so I'm going to play this for our listeners.
What are we doing with it? The Regional Coordinating Committee for the Pan-African Federalist Movement in North America invites you to the North American Pan-African Federalist Convention. This year's theme is African Political Unity for Sovereignty and Upliftment. So join us as we take action and prepare for the Global Pan-African Conference live October 15th to 19th via Zoom. Register now at eventbrite.com/Pan-African Federalist Convention.
And I would suggest that you please do so. I'll be playing that commercial consistently for the next number of days leading up to it. And because I want as many people as possible. I mean, even I know that we're talking about voting in this process here. And I'm just going to keep it real. I've never voted for a Caucasian in my life. And I'm not going to start. My main concern is not what happens here. I know it is for everybody. I understand that. We live here. But my main concern is what happens on the continent. You know, I'm like Marcus Garvey. What, I would give up a continent for a country, you know, for an island? No, I'm talking about the continent. And what's happening on the continent is deplorable. The military bases that are on the continent, multiple military bases. The just as Kwame Nkrumah said, if we do not unify, we'll be haggling and wrangling over lands and so forth, and we'll be colonized again. And it's happening. And I talked about previously 300 million Chinese to be relocated on the continent of Africa. So that's going to be very important. Also, too, I just got to say this about Trump. The dog whistle that Kamala Harris said was blowed up with a bullhorn. That dog whistle that was blowed up with a bullhorn. Stand back and stand by. And now you look at all those times that it was said about Trump being a racist. I'm like Malcolm. I believe I'm like Malcolm. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history of Donald Trump. I have never liked this man. I remember him being on Donahue's show, a few other shows, being prominent, because that's how he is. He seeks this kind of attention. I remember when he went after the so-called Central Park Five, now called the Exonerated Five. I remember him being on Donahue and saying all these things about this. Also, I remember one time he said, this is during the 70s, during affirmative action, it's better to be somebody black. You have more, I would rather be black. You have more advantages of being black than anything else, you know? So, Brother Muhammad, you with me?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I'm here, Oshie. Yes. Well, I don't say his name.
Well, I never called him president. I've never.
I don't say his name unless it's a Freudian slip. And I don't usually call him Sigmund Freud, but yeah. I'll attribute it to his the vernacular as to when you say something that you really intend not to say. And one thing about him is he has never been able to pull a punch.
Right.
And there's something that Joy Behar on The View says that I really like. She said, when you, from a position of power to everyday Joe, if you're going to go after somebody, punch up, don't punch down.
Mm.
And here's an individual who punches down, and I say this about him. People confused or trapped. Why is he so in love with Russia? There's no black people in Russia. That's what he loves about it. Is that he knows that if all fails, he can go to Russia and a few other places where he does not have to come in. Because what is the young lady who resigned from the COVID-19 task force she was working with?
Right.
His partner, Penn. Pence, she said, he said, oh, great. It's good that the COVID came along.
Right.
Because now I don't have to shake hands with these disgusting people. I mean, they, even the people who support him, he doesn't like them.
Right. Right.
So this is one of the things that is a challenge. You know, if you want to step out outside the realm of ethnic, nobody really who is in a position of authority or power can remain there very long and successfully if they don't like the people they're serving or the people that they have some control or power over. And that's a test for it. Okay, do you really love these people that you're supposed to be serving? Because at the end of the day, he's supposed to be the president of the United States, everybody. We know that has not always worked out like that. And I don't even have that expectation anymore. I did not have the expectation that a check was going to show up in my mailbox when I voted for Barack Obama twice. I worked on his campaign in 08, and I liked those checks. I would take one of those checks any day of the week because they paid nice.
Yeah.
08. It didn't come back in 12. 08. Man, yeah, that was.
Well, you know, my thing is if I donate to you and I'll vote for you if I can vote for you, if I donate to you, you know, like Gwen Moore, Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Marvin Pratt when he was running for mayor. I even voted for Hardison. Remember Hardison?
Or Hardison?
Yeah.
Hardison.
Yeah, the sheriff.
Sheriff Hardison.
He ran for mayor.
He was sheriff of Milwaukee County, and then he ran for mayor.
Right.
And, there is absolutely nothing. I posted this recently. I don't know if you know who this sister is. I met her. I had the honor of meeting her once and pleasure of meeting her once. And she was, I said honor, but she wasn't even like that. She's one of the most down-to-earth sisters I ever met. Her name was Dr. Gloria Johnson Powell.
Gloria Johnson Powell.
She was a member of SNCC.
Mm, okay.
And she was going to Meharry Medical College, and she was going to drop out of college to get involved in when they had the summer where they were doing the buses.
Right.
They were riding, you know, some of the buses got set on fire and whatnot. But she wanted to drop out of Meharry Medical College and join it. And Dr. King told her, no, stay in school. We're going to need you in the future.
Okay.
And so she went from there. She did a residency at UCLA. She served out there for about 10 years. Then she took on a position at Harvard. And she, fortunate for Wisconsin, or met people in Madison and anybody that came in contact with outside of Madison, she took a position at the university. She had about 5 positions at UW-Madison. But she said something when I was working for OIC, the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, at a conference in Waukesha. And we went as a community organizer, some of the staff and I went to the conference. And this sister said, everybody is ethnocentric.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Everybody, every human being that comes from a family or a culture is ethnocentric.
Ethnocentric.
I don't have any problem with Jewish people loving the Jewish people and advocating for them. And we all have that to a degree. We probably know they're one of the most confused ethnicities on the planet. Historically, and rightly so, is the indigenous Americans of African descent. Because we've been so inundated with the other that sometimes we don't know who we are.
Right.
And I recognize that.
That's
you got some brothers in Milwaukee, Oshie, that all of a sudden they done popped up, back up. They done resurrected the Morris Science Temple of America.
I know.
They wearing fans.
Yeah.
And they are trying to, you know, I understand that.
Well, see.
I don't agree with, but I understand it.
I read that today. I read the, it's called the Inye Sesem, which is Daily Revolutionary Thought by Brother Baba Mwalimu Baruti. And that's what I read today. Because if you don't know, in your culture, you don't know who you are, then the European will constantly influence you and direct you, or some religion will do the same. Because that's not an indigenous, I mean, Islam is not indigenous religion to Africa. Christianity sure in the hell ain't. Judaism. Now, I know that some of them like to make a tie, like the Coptic Christians, to Kemet or Egypt or to Ethiopia. But they're still not indigenous to African religion. And, you know, and the problem is that these religions, a lot of times they have us believing that we're not who we are. And we gravitate to that. It's more important to be Christian. It's more important to be Muslim. It's more important to be Seventh-day Adventist, or just as you just said, more science. Now, I was very, Muhammad, man, I saw a clip of more science brothers walking the street, man. There was like a lot of young people, man. And I'm like, how did the more science get all these young people dressed in pink, dressed in purple
Where
and
was
gold?
This?
You know, I don't know what city it was, but it had to be an East Coast city, I believe, because there were multitudes. They were literally standing four abreast, and they went on for blocks, you know?
And it was a contemporary?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like...
you know, as my friend Eustace used to say, we're just right for the plucking.
Yeah.
And so somebody that steps forward and say, hey, look at this. This is who you are. So at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I heard, what is the brother's name who was Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yeah. Okay, the scientist. Yeah, astrophysicist.
He said something on The View last week, I think it was. I've been trying to capture it on YouTube or someplace just to edit it down to this. But he said, I stood in, and I don't know where on the continent of Africa he was, he said, but I stood in a spot where every Homo sapien that ever lived and that will ever be born originated from.
Right. It must have been, well, they say human beings began in Central East Africa, in the area of south of Ethiopia, in the Olduvai Gorge area. That's where they believe that Homo sapiens.
I don't remember where I started out. But I do know this, beyond a shadow of a doubt. If somebody asked him foolishly behind that statement that he made, something about aliens. And he said, for the people that claim, there are people who have claimed to have seen aliens. He said, catch one of them and bring them to me.
I'm hip.
He said, then I'll believe what you say. But hip. Otherwise, he talked about being able to be, you know, human beings being able to, or not being able to survive in certain other planets, the conditions, the environment that's there. But at the end of the day, you know, in this particular space where we stand now, and again, this, to me, this can be connected to voting and it cannot be connected to voting. But organizing, like Malik Shabazz said, you say often, okay, and let me quote Imam W.D. Muhammad, what you want might not be exactly what I want. What I want might not be exactly what you want. He said, but what we should be able to come together on is the things that we need to live.
I said, yeah.
Things that we need to live. And when you look at the whole of the United States and where it is now in terms of COVID-19, in every area, African Americans are at risk or at peril.
Yeah.
The numbers that we are in the United States, which is what, about 15%?
Right.
13%?
Well, they say, you know what? At one time, Muhammad, we were 17%. Yeah, and everybody agreed to that and understood that. That was being reported. And now we're at 13%. And that's
okay,
because...
somewhere in the teens, but,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But in comparison to the rest of the country and where we are in the numbers as far as COVID-19...
We're up there.
We up there. And we're far more vulnerable to than just about any other population that's here, along with Latino and Hispanic peoples who are, you know, live below poverty or whatever the case. But clearly, some people have died. And I mean, I don't know who I was saying this to yesterday. It might have been you PBS NewsHour. One day a week, I think on Friday, they go through some of the people who have been lost in COVID-19 in the past 6 months. We're talking about 6 months. 200,000 people here in the United States, the highest number of anywhere in the world.
Right.
And our number in the world, the United States makes up about 20% of the world's population, I think.
No, 5%. 5% of the world's 5% of the world's population.
5%.
But 20% of COVID deaths.
COVID deaths, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, I told somebody Oshie could be a sports announcer. But yeah, the numbers in terms of our being having been killed by, I mean, it's some good people, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I mean, everybody is, nobody deserves to die from this stuff. But I'm talking about some African Americans who were in the game.
Yeah.
On college campuses, in communities, and they've gone. They're not here anymore. And you know, that did not have to happen.
Right.
And it's political.
Yeah.
It's political. You cannot get away from politics. If you live anywhere, I don't care what part of this planet you live on, there's some politics going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you either in the game or out of the game. And if you're out of the game,
you're going to be affected
in the game.
You're going to be affected by the game one way or the other. Whether you want to or not. Let me catch this call. We have a caller.
Sure.
646-646. Good afternoon. 646. Good afternoon.
Yeah, what's going on, OC man? How did you enjoy the dog and pony show last night?
I didn't watch that madness. I didn't watch that madness, Jay. But I did watch the pundits.
Entertainment in your life, man. you gotta watch crackers act up every now and then, man. You always got the Negro acting a fool. Why not let the cracker be a fool in entertainment for you? You know what I mean?
I'm gonna tell you, I couldn't.
Tell you like this: if black people think that their lives is gonna be that vastly different with Joe Biden as the head cracker in charge, then we are as sick as I know we are, because that devil right there, he ain't swift enough, sharp enough, like my man Trump said, smart enough, and he ain't got it all there, man.
Well, let me just say this, Jay.
From a low-grade form of dementia, man, both of them.
Well, let me just say this. I think what he brings, as opposed to what Trump brought, that's the deal. It ain't him personally.
See, Trump, what makes big girls happy?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Attention.
Yeah.
That's all he brings.
Well, see, he's going to bring
intelligence.
No. I don't give a damn about Joe Biden personally. What he's going to bring is the people who will be more effective and sensitive to the situation as opposed to what Trump brought. Trump brought criminals, okay? Listen to this, man. What has the Democratic Party brought in all these many years that I've been cognizant? And I've been cognizant of this madness since the latter part of the 50s and Eisenhower. Okay? I remember John F. Kennedy and Nixon. I remember Barry Goldwater, In Your Heart, You Know He's Right, as one of the first real right-wing Republicans. Okay? I remember, I don't really involve myself in the politics because as I grew older and understanding, that's why I don't vote. That's why I don't buy part of the process. I understand this madness. But by the same token, I understand also what will they bring. And so Trump brought these criminals. Muhammad, you want to get in this conversation?
Well, I you know who came to my mind, Oshie, in terms of, because I think, you know, what the brother is saying is based on your expectations. It brought to my mind Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac.
I love Bernie Mac.
Bernie Mac said something about, he said, I'm going to put it just like he said, you know what? I'm tired of coochie. He said, I got a bottle of nut juice for about 3 minutes. that's a heavyweight or any boxing weight round. And there's people been knocked out in the first round.
That's right.
So I'll let a woman know up front before I go into this. Let me help you temper down your expectations. I'm not going to put up a clock or look at my watch. But if I go beyond 3 minutes, you know you got something going on. So again, when it comes to voting, I think it's when the brother says you're black behind, there's nothing in voting or somebody being in the office of president that is going to affect anybody's behind the next day unless you rich or unless you already in politics. So you know, the fact of the matter is, what is your expectation that you're going to get from just going in, pulling a lever or penciling in or inking in a little round circle? But like I said before, what do you want? What is your expectation? What are you organized around? Because you can do nothing, and some people think it's a waste of time. Well, look at all. I sat down the other night in preparation for this ocean, and I wrote down the things that we've done. You and I know people. Jay may not. Waste of time. That stuff you put up your nose back in the day, wasn't that a waste of your time?
Oh, sure, and especially my money. Especially
alcohol. Yeah. Alcohol you be drinking, that's a waste of time. So how am I focusing on something that really, if I wanted to have a receipt for any alcohol, I could go get it. But like I said, I called up the election commission and I said, I want to know when my mother voted. A lady with an eighth grade education who grew up until she graduated from the eighth grade. There was no high school in the Jim Crow South in 1948 for her to go to. She went from eighth grade to Pickett Cotton. But I want to know when once she got up, and it wasn't when we got to Milwaukee in the 50s, probably sometime in the 70s, 80s, 90s, I want to know when did my mother first vote. And there's a record of that. Now, guess what? If you don't vote, there's a record of that too. I don't know when you're going to look for it. So that's all voting really comes down to. If you want more than get something out of it, then organize. Stop crying and complaining. Organize. Find out what you should get, what you want, and get together with people to try to get it. And if you don't get it this year, get it the next year. But people that just sit back and say, I used to play basketball and watch people like that on the sideline. Yeah. And my thing would be, get your ass out here. That was funny to you because he blocked my shot. Get your ass out here. Okay?
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
What you do with your vote, it's your money. You don't have to spend it. You can keep it in your pocket. If you spend it, and don't ask for something in return for it, that's on you. And that's anywhere on the planet. If you go to Nigeria, don't they have elections in Nigeria?
Yes, they do. They have elections
don't
in
they
Ghana.
Have elections in Ghana.
Yes, they do.
Don't they have elections? Now, they don't have them in Saudi Arabia. And people always talking about the king this and the queen that. I don't know if I'd like living in a monarchy. That was back then. Right now, we're living with somebody in the White House.
It's like a monarch.
Right after Barack Obama, mm-hmm. who acts like he's a monarch.
Exactly.
And if you want to say it don't affect your life, if you want to say
hold on, Jay. Hold on, Jay. I'll let you in. Hold on, Jay.
If you one of the people who don't know somebody who was not who is not dead now because of COVID-19, then you are very fortunate.
Yeah.
I know at least 10 people.
I do too, brother.
I know personally, who are dead from COVID-19.
I do too.
And the guy sitting in the White House is culpable.
Exactly.
In a lot of those steps.
Exactly, because he could have stopped that shit way back in February.
It's a hoax, Oshi. It's a Democratic hoax that took up just to make some
yeah.
the ugliest mother squeezer, the most out of shape, pale, orange face, fake haired, ignorant ass person on the planet
yep.
caused a lot of people to die that did not have to die.
And see, and to me, that right there alone,
I
to
disagree
me,
with that.
Should disqualify you. You
I
disagree, Jay?
I disagree with that.
Okay, go ahead, Jay.
You know what I disagree with that is? Because based on the way that the system is set up, it could have went either way. Because the truth of the matter is, if we really want to look at it, it wasn't the Chinese coming into this country that caused all of this harm. It was the Europeans that came into Kennedy Airport and other airports that he didn't put the ban on.
Right.
Now, who's to say if somebody else was the president, they would have to lock stuff down? They may have done it a little quicker, but they would have probably made the same mistake that Trump made in not shut down
no.
coming in from
okay.
Europe.
Hold on,
so
Jay.
We need to be honest when
okay.
we make the type of analysis.
Hold on, Jay.
Totally blaming it on Fredo.
Jay, hold on. The bottom line was this. The scientists get together around the world, the World Health Organization, all of these, and they said, and it was given to Trump. He said, this virus that is coming is something way different than anything else. This is what he admitted to Woodward. This is what he admitted to. And this is back in February. He knew how it was transmitted. He knew the veracity of it. But yet, what did he say? What did he say, Jay? He's going to do it what? I'm going to play it down. Because I don't want to cause a panic. I'm going to play it down. I always like to play it down. Had he, at that moment, Jay, said to this United States, this is what's happening. This is what we must do. This is what the science says. This is what they said to CDC and the World Organization, United Institutes of Health. We must wear a mask. I'm wearing a mask. We must distance. We may have to close these businesses down. No huge social gatherings for a few weeks, maybe even a month. But after that, we would have control of it. We would have suppressed it. There wouldn't be any spikes. We would prevent. Let me finish. We would have prevented people coming because you're right. Europe was, man, spiking, especially in Italy. They were dropping like fuck. Excuse me. I'm sorry. They were dropping like flies. So, yes, you're right. They should have held nobody's coming in because we're going to get a handle on this. But that's not what happened. He didn't want to mess with the stock market. He didn't want to mess with this. He played it down. And look what has happened. The largest number of people who had died from COVID-19 in the world. The most cases in the world. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, but the reality is this. You can't totally blame it on him. You have to also blame it on the Senate. You also have to blame it on the Congress. There is checks and balance in this society.
Jay.
Or there should be. Can I just finish the point, please? Oshi, I'll just hang up.
Okay.
You know, because there's a key thing to all of this. I mean, the key thing to all of this is this. Stop blaming this one man for things that will happen with other white people in the same position, because the reality is white people are your enemy. And we sometimes think that one cracker is better than the other cracker, but they both crackers. They both don't want to see you succeed. Look at the country. Look at how we've been treated since we've been here. Just because one cracker won't beat you with a whip, but it'll beat you with a stick, don't make him better. The reality is, the way this system is set up, they have to protect whiteness. And whiteness is about what? Money. It's not about lives. They don't care about all these people dying. Do you know what would really cause them more problems? If all of the black people that died had $100,000 insurance policies, that would cause them more problems than just black people dying. Do you see what's going on in most of these states in regards to the white people? I mean, I'll give you a prime example.
Make it quick, Jay, because I got a bunch of other calls.
I'll just say this right quick. Yesterday I was on Twitter, and I was reading the tweet by Stephanie Wu, who's on MSNBC. She put a question out there asking white people, basically, how they would do it. And man, if you could look at the thousands and thousands of replies, yo, white people catch hell. They ain't never faced what they facing right now. And it ain't even being reported in the manner in which they suffering. So we need to be clear. Donald Trump is a problem, but the next white man is going to be just as much as a problem, because he's always going to do one thing: protect whiteness.
Okay.
And the growth of the empire.
Oh, all right. Yeah, go ahead, Muhammad.
Just real quick. What doesn't make any difference who is in the office. The fact of the matter is, what would have changed all of what has happened in the past 6 months that Italy did, that this guy in the White House and the Republicans and the Southern Civil War mentality, they object to anything that looks
That's
like
right.
a national policy.
That's right.
They, since the Civil War, they are not going to go along with
right.
anything.
You ain't going to dictate to me.
Involves, yeah, that's a national policy. So if this man had shut the country down and implemented the things that the scientists and the doctors say should have, it would be a different outcome. He didn't do it.
Yep.
So that's that. I ain't going to castigate and say any other Caucasian man that would have been in the office. They had a system set up to deal with this
right.
from the Ebola and the S1N1.
Right.
He dismantled it.
That's right. He discarded it.
He dismantled it.
Yep.
And the people around him went along with it. So that's my answer. Let's
right
see what someone else
All right. Thank you. Unknown caller.
Yeah, good afternoon, Brother OG.
Brother Paul. Brother Paul from the UK.
Yeah,
how you doing, man?
Absolutely on
good.
Point. You know, Brother OG, there's so much that has been raised. So let me just be as quick as I can.
Okay, thank you.
I absolutely understand how you feel about the COVID situation. But history must be a guidance. It must be a map to actually give precedence to our adversaries, because there's a history of our adversaries who control the media, who control the narrative, absolutely lying to us. There's a history. We know about the Tuskegee experiment. At the time that they were doing the Tuskegee experiment, they didn't tell the victims that what was happening to them. They led them to believe that they were being medicated for good reasons. And that's not the first time they've done this, yeah?
Right.
So the bottom line is, why should any of us believe anything they're telling us today? To me, that suggests that we've learned nothing from history. No disrespect to anybody. It just shows us that all of a sudden that we absolutely believe their narrative. And I find that very, very, very troubling. And not only that, how much evidence is out there to suggest that they're not telling the truth? How much? Look, we all know people who have died. People die all the time. More people die from abortion, aborted fetuses, right, than you can ever imagine, right, than this COVID. More people die from common flu, right, something like 10 to 1, than they're even recording these figures. So something's not right. You understand? Right? So the bottom line is and I absolutely agree with Brother Jay in that this thing is a worldwide thing. It has nothing to do with Donald, Hitler, Mussolini, Trump.
I do not understand, dear brother, connecting. I'm Muslim, and I'm not a proponent of abortion. But what a woman does with her uterus is between her partner, her doctor, and her Lord. Comparing abortion.
Yeah, but the point is.
Hold on, Paul. Go ahead, Muhammad. Go ahead.
You know, the reality is that
that's your opinion.
Depending upon where you live on this planet, and Oshi and I live in the United States, 200,000 people have died here. Many of them didn't have to die. I'm not even concerned anymore about where it came from. As one doctor said, if it can't catch you, it can't get you. So that's all I can try to do as an individual, or we can do collectively as a community.
Make sure I don't
catch it. Whataboutism is not what we need right now. What about this? What about that?
All right, go ahead.
Well, you're wrong.
Go ahead, Paul.
I don't agree with that at all. Absolutely disagree. To me, that's what I call burying your head in your ass or burying your head in the sand. Because it's not about what aboutism. It's about dealing with the facts. The facts, not just following the narrative, which is set out to mislead us and drive us to be vaccinated. That is the end agenda. So when you talk about whatism or whatever you want to call it, that's not true. And by the way, let me just put it this way. Yeah, you're a Muslim, and I'm glad you said that, yeah? Let me raise another
situation. No, you're not glad I said that. Really?
No, I am glad you said that. I am glad, because I want to raise it.
Hold on, Muhammad. I want to get your opinion on this, yeah?
In right there in North Africa, right, we have a situation with Fulani groups. Right now, you've had a coup in Mali. Nobody wants to talk about it, yeah? Where the government was overthrown. And they brought in an indigenous African government, as opposed to a Fulani Muslim government, right, which doesn't even see itself as African. Now, I'm asking you a question, yeah? Right now in North Africa, the biggest problem we have is the jihadists, right, and the Muslim agenda subjugating the African people. What's your opinion on that?
I am an anti-terrorist. I didn't like Osama bin Laden. I thought he was the worst thing that ever happened to Muslims. And so Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, those are extremist nuts. That's my response to them. I don't find nothing that they promote or do in accord with my understanding of Islam, and I'm not a scholar. So what those people are doing most of the time, kidnapping young girls, blowing up people because they worship with a different God, that is not – I've never read anything in the Quran or in the Sunnah of Prophet Muhammad that inspires me or gives me the idea that I have to take your life or do anything to you for what you believe. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what I say.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear that, but I would like to say it's not just the so-called terrorists. I said the Fulani. The Fulani are Muslim by their definition. Okay, they are people, and if you study what's going on there, you've got Bill Gates and all the rest of them supporting the Fulani herdsmen to overthrow North Africa in Niger, where you've got they're not just terrorists. These are people, right, under the guise of Islam and jihadism. Okay. And I'm just wondering, the second question last year, don't you think that Muslims outside, especially African Muslims, so-called, right, don't you think they should have something to say about the treacherous behavior which is going on in North Africa, the killings? As we speak, people are being killed and murdered under the guise of Islam and jihadism. So
well,
what about that? What's happening there?
Before you answer, Muhammad, that's happening all throughout a lot of the areas, particularly in North Africa, where you had, like in Libya, what the United States and Europe did to get rid of Muammar Gaddafi, the chaos in Libya, where Africans who are trying to migrate and are being held prisoner, many of them are being castrated to be sold to Abu Dhabi or United Arab Emirates or Omar or Khatam, whatever. You see? So it's an ugly situation. Go ahead, Muhammad.
You talk about those corrupt monarchies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't roll with the monarchy thing because I don't believe that the person who should be the leader of anything should not be based on blood. If that was the case, then Ali would have succeeded Prophet Muhammad instead of Abu Bakr, Umar, and Uthman. So I don't buy into the Shiite or the idea that who leads a group of people should be based on who their father was or because of whose womb they came out of. So I'm not surprised at what they're doing in Saudi Arabia. Hell, they was getting ready to bring Nicki Minaj to Saudi Arabia. So clearly something has gone awry. The Muslim sisters there are like, what? You getting ready to bring this witch with fake booty and fake this and fake that and shaking her rubber? We got to be covered up like this? Hell no. They canceled.
Well, you know, just like in ancient Kemet, there were 30 dynasties because might did not make right. Right made right. And you were held to standards of righteousness. So if I'm Pharaoh or king, whatever, Muhammad, you are king. You are Pharaoh. I'm your son. People love you, respected you. And here I come along. I prove to be weak. They're going to get rid of my ass. And another family will come in with a new dynasty. So no, just because that's my bloodline doesn't necessarily mean that I will continue to rule. Because right made right, not might made right. You got something else to say, Paul? Because I got another caller.
All right, I'm just going to finish it this way. I'm just saying my point is really, the reason why I raise this is that those who call themselves Muslim, the world doesn't, you know, I don't mean no disrespect to anyone, but the world doesn't center around America. We've got a whole planet. And really, we're Africans, yeah? And we should be concerned. Other Africans fighting Africans and killing Africans yes. under the name of Islam. And if you call yourself Muslim outside of Africa.
Christianity too.
Yeah.
Absolutely agree. But I think the point I'm trying to make, we got to widen this discussion because as Malcolm X says, what affects us over there affects us right where we live, all around the planet. Take care.
And also, thank you, Brother Paul. Also, Malcolm said, is that when I come to the table to talk about the issues that are affecting our people, Islam is my theology. Islam is what I'm not talking about Islam. Because I know if I'm starting to talk about Islam, then those who want to be Christians or those who want to be Seventh-day Adventists or those who want to be Jehovah's Witnesses, they will have problems, issues, because we don't suffer because we're Muslim or Christians or Seventh-day Adventists. We suffer because we're Africans. And that's how we must come to the table. 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Marcus, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good. Brother, and good evening to the guests. And, you know, I just want to agree with what the previous callers and yourself stated. It really doesn't matter because, in any case, it's still a white man. Regardless of who wins, it's a white man. So, you know, the important thing is what are we going to do as a people?
Right.
And I think that at this time, you know, the philosophy and opinion that Marcus Garvey is the solution.
That's right.
It's the only solution. You know, someone said the other day, they said, look, you have to choose your battlefield. And I think Africa is a better battlefield for us to fight on than cheer. You know what I'm saying?
So I agree.
The time is now. You know, everything is wide open. Nobody is holding us here in chains anymore. You know, this is not slavery. You know, we can leave. You know, time to leave, you know, and go build an empire for ourselves.
Yes, sir.
And we'll be better. Take care.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
All right.
414-429. 414-429. 414-429. Okay, you just want to listen, I guess. Okay. You only have a few more minutes, Brother Muhammad. I really enjoyed this conversation. With these few more minutes, man, and I hope not to deal with our listeners here, but, you know, tonight is the beginning of the NBA championship. And it's in a bubble. It's down in Florida, and I know it's going to be different and so forth. I still think it's legitimate. I mean, they balling. They playing. I remember when you were staying on Sherman in North Avenue, and the first game of the NBA Finals at the time was 84. And me and you was watching the game, and L.A. kicked Boston's ass. And, of course, you know I love that. But they lost that series. They lost that series in 84. Boston had some shenanigans when they came to Boston, man. Red Auerbach had cut off the air conditioning in the Laker locker room. They were sweating like you wouldn't. It was like a sauna, you know. And they lost that game in 7. Well, in 1985, if anybody is a true L.A. Laker fan like I am, because I grew up as an L.A. Laker fan in Milwaukee, I fell in love with Elgin Baylor. Elgin Baylor was my idol. I loved Elgin Baylor. Elgin Baylor was the first transcendent player. A transcendent player means that he takes the game to another level. And if you go on to YouTube and you look up Elgin Baylor, you could see when he was playing in the late 50s and into the 60s, how he was as opposed to all them other cats. He was killing them, you know. And him, after Elgin came Connie Hawkins. After Connie was the doctor, Julius Erving. After the doctor was Michael. I put Kobe along with Michael. I don't say that Kobe's a transcendent because Kobe was just like Michael. But LeBron is the next transcendent player. Who's after LeBron? I don't know. But the person who's after LeBron is going
to
have...
I'll tell you somebody that plays transcendent to me, and that's his partner, A.D.
Anthony Davis,
for a person of his height.
Yeah.
And you almost think of a person like George Gervin, you know, who, you know, was what, probably about 6'10", 6'11"?
Yeah.
But handled the ball like a guard. A.D., man, fadeaway, you know, in the paint.
Right.
He's the total package. And certainly LeBron, you know, I also, Oshi, you know, when it comes to picking and saying who's the best, you know, as much as I love Muhammad Ali, I think you have to take everybody in stride. And I think you're also coming from this vantage point as well. We've been kept out of most things that we excel in whether you're talking about
right.
sports, politics, entertainment, whatever the case. And that one, it's the narrative in just about every story. I don't care what part of the planet you come on. That one that you try to keep down, that's the one that's going to rise to
that's
the
right.
top. And it's sometimes slow. I wish there were more Doc Rivers coaches in the NBA in the NFL and in the Major League Baseball. But we're still in a fight. So let us not forget that.
That's right.
The problem we have is a lot of us either aren't in the fight or think it's over. And in a ring, in a fight, that's the worst thought you can have.
That's right.
Is the thing, the final bell is rung, and you still getting your ass whipped. That's because you're in the ring, dude.
Yeah.
And you got to fight in the ring and out of the ring.
That's right.
The
fight is continuous. I appreciate it, Brother Muhammad. Thank you, all the callers, all the listeners. Appreciate it. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate you listening and calling in. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Bibi Fahodie, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to hear you on Friday. I'll be back on Friday. Hope to see you then. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace, family.